Everyone, this is Danielle Ewan. Welcome to the call. Today's call is What's Next for Early Childhood in the 112th Congress. The call is designed to give you all a summary of what happened at the end of the last Congress and to foreshadow the main issues and strategies for the next Congress. Due to the large number of registered participants, all of your lines are muted during the conference call. However, if you would like to ask us a question, please email that question to me at dewen@clasp.org. That's dewen@clasp.org. You can submit questions at any time, and we will answer them at the very end. We have a total of four speakers today who will talk about the early childhood issues at the end of the 111th Congress, the 112th, and strategies for state and local advocates as we move forward at the federal level. Today's conversation will focus on the very short-term need to get Congress to appropriate funds, but we'll also move on to a longer-term strategy as we enter the period of advocacy needed to get funds for the next fiscal year, FY 2012, which begins in September. We are not certain about the potential for CCDBG reauthorization in the next year, and we'll include a discussion around reauthorization in a future call. On the call today are myself, the Director of Child Care and Early Education at the Center for Law and Social Policy, Helen Blank, Director of Leadership and Public Policy at the National Women's Law Center, Adele Robinson, Deputy Executive Director at the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and Harriet Victor, the National Director of the First 5 Years Fund. Helen and I will start with some basic information about the appropriations and budget process for CCDBG and for Head Start, as well as an update on the Early Learning Challenge Fund. Adele will then talk briefly about ESEA reauthorization. Helen will return to touch on implementation of the Child and Adult Care Food Program, and Harriet will discuss some successful strategies to involve grass-top advocates, especially local business leaders. We'll then discuss next steps, including tomorrow's call-in day to the White House, and take questions. As always, the call will be recorded, and an audio file will be available on our websites within a few days. Helen?
Thank you, Danielle. Let me start by setting the stage with a reminder about the usual process. Every year, Congress has to pass 13 appropriation bills to fund discretionary programs, including CCDBG, Head Start, and the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA. As you know, we worked for most of the last year to have the ARRA funding for CCDBG, Head Start, and Early Head Start included in the FY 2011 appropriations bill. Those funds, which totaled $4.1 billion and created services for approximately 300,000 children, ended on September 30th, 2010. While it looked like we would have some success, and we found support in both the House and the Senate. As you remember, the Senate omnibus bill included a $681 million increase for CCDBG, an $840 million increase for Head Start, and $300 million to initiate an Early Learning Challenge Fund. Ultimately, the short-term continuing resolution, passed on December 22nd, did not include any increases for CCDBG, for Head Start and Early Head Start, or the Challenge Fund in FY 2011, despite your extraordinary efforts. The resolution ends on March 4th, and Congress must pass new legislation to fund the government for the rest of the year by then. We're asking for $1 billion in CCDBG and $1 billion in Head Start so that the 300,000 children do not lose the services they currently have. However, House Speaker John Boehner has called for cutting non-security discretionary funding, funding that isn't related to Homeland Security, defense, or veterans, back to the 2008 levels starting this March. That would be a cut of 21% for the final 7 months of FY 2011. It's a cut of below the CBO baseline, which is the 2010 fiscal year funding level adjusted for inflation, and an even deeper cut in FY 2012. This would mean that 255 children would lose child care and 120,000 children would lose Head Start and 10,000 classrooms would be shut down. This is a critically important issue because the baseline funding levels established now for FY 2011 will impact the negotiations for funding in future years. Our goal is to get the ARRA funding levels, or close to them like the Senate did, into the base funding for CCDBG and Head Start so these higher funding levels remain available in future years. The higher number we get, or baseline, for fiscal 2011, the higher the likelihood we'll keep those funding levels in FY 2012 and beyond. We must work very hard over the next few weeks to get our message out. Investments in early education help us build a smarter, healthier, and stronger America. Deficit reduction will only come from wiser investment of public dollars, and data consistently shows that starting early is such a wise choice. Early education ultimately lowers costs and reduces deficits by increasing academic performance, improving health outcomes, decreasing reliance on social programs, and building economic productivity. Head Start, Early Head Start, and CCDBG are our key federal early learning investments. They do not reach millions of young children. Only 1 in 6 eligible children receive child care assistance. Only 4% of eligible babies and toddlers can participate in Early Head Start, and less than half of eligible preschool-age children can access Head Start. Given these gaps and the importance of early learning to our country's current and future economy, we believe the economic stimulus package included a prudent and essential expansion for these programs. We need to pull together as much information as possible, though, about what will happen in your state if the ARRA funds are not continued. This means collecting information on the growth in eligible families, waiting lists, changes in eligibility, parent fees, and reimbursement rates, economic impact on states of the loss in funds, and so on. We also need everyone to commit to make as many contacts as possible with their members of Congress, especially those newly elected offices. You may also remember that earlier versions of the continuing resolution included language creating the Early Learning Challenge Fund and funded it at $300 million. That effort failed, but there may still be an opportunity for the fund to be included in other legislation, as Adele will discuss later. We have not been given any indication at this time that the fund will be included in this next vote on funding, although we are always hopeful. We also have to make sure the administration is behind the effort to increase funding for CCDBG and Head Start in FY 2011 and FY 2012. We need everybody in our court. So we're asking you to mobilize your networks to call the White House tomorrow, January 14th, with this message. Protecting funding for child care, Head Start, and Early Head Start will help us build a smarter, healthier, and stronger America. Sustain the $1 billion funding for Head Start, Early Head Start, as well as the $1 billion funding for child care during FY 2011. Maintain these levels into FY 2012. Next week, we and other groups will circulate a sign-on letter urging Congress to sustain these investments as they work on the funding for the rest of the fiscal year. We hope that you'll work to get as many organizations from your state and local communities as possible onto this letter to demonstrate how important these funds are to the children and families in your communities. Be on the lookout for it. At the same time, we are working on funding for the current fiscal year. We have to start thinking about funding for next year, and Danielle is going to talk about the request for FY 2012.
Thank you, Helen. Unfortunately, we have a communications challenge for this year, which is part of why we wanted to do this call, so we could lay it out for everybody. As Helen explained, Congress failed to finish their work on the FY 2011 appropriations. While we have to push really hard to get that funding now, we also have to start thinking about how to get increased funding for our core programs in the next fiscal year, 2012. However, we don't yet know what the funding for 2011 will be, which makes this whole conversation a little bit confusing. The administration, however, is currently creating its budget proposal for FY 2012, which we believe will be released the week of February 14th. They must hear from us about the importance of early childhood funding as they move forward, and that they must advocate for continuing the ARRA funds in their proposal as they did last year. This advocacy with the White House, which will start tomorrow, will be the first step in a long process to get increased funding for child care and Head Start. After the administration's budget proposal comes out in February, Congress will set their own budget levels and create appropriations bill. House Republicans, like Representative Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, who is the new chair of the House Budget Committee, say they will seek to freeze total non-security appropriations, As Helen said, that's for areas other than defense, veterans, and homeland security at the fiscal 2008 level for all of FY 2012. The House has also passed new rules that will make it, on the one hand, easier to do tax cuts, which brings less money into the Treasury, and much more difficult to increase spending. They may also propose caps on non-defense discretionary spending that will require deep cuts in these programs, not just this year and this fiscal year, but for many years to come. While these rules currently only apply to the House, we are concerned that with 23 Democratic senators up for re-election in 2012, the Senate may also consider these kinds of rules. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which we'll talk about at the end, has extensive information on these details for those of you that want to know more. Congressional budget action and development of appropriations proposals usually happens in the spring and early summer. Each of the organizations on this call and other organizations here in Washington will be sending out alerts asking you for action. But it's important that you start planning now to communicate with legislators and their staff. Given the sharp differences between the House and the Senate, getting a final budget may be very difficult. For example, there was no budget passed last year. However, whether they pass a budget bill or not, they must still pass appropriations bills, those bills that actually fund the agencies and the programs that fund the children and families that we care about. In addition to collecting data on the children and families in your state, we hope that you personally will commit to setting up site visits with members and their staff to quality child care settings serving low-income children using CCDBG and Head Start funding to create full-day and full-year opportunities for families in order to start showing them what the money buys and why these dollars are so important to communities. Adele, can you update us on the next steps in the process for the Elementary and Secondary Education Act?
As you know, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, otherwise known as No Child Left Behind, has been scheduled for reauthorization and attempted for reauthorization for a few years now. Through the CR and omnibus debate, the administration made clear that they see continuation of Race to the Top, which was an ERA-funded program, as a top priority. We don't know yet what other funds the U.S. Department of Education will ask for in the President's request that relate to early childhood education. We have also received signals that the administration will try to work with Congress to move forward the reauthorization through the Health and Education and Workforce Committees. They have developed a blueprint last year that encompasses their proposals that you can find on www.ed.gov. As many of you know, it seemed to have limited information about the administration's early childhood priorities in a reauthorization. If Congress moves ESEA forward, it's not clear what will be included for younger children, such as the Early Learning Challenge Fund. At the moment, there seems to be less appetite for creating and funding new programs, but we will continue to push for early childhood in all available opportunities. All of us leading this call, as well as many other organizations, presented recommendations to Congress last year on how to use ESEA to strengthen and expand high-quality early childhood education, and we will be doing so again soon. However, we don't know the actual timing of when congressional leaders will start the process of reauthorizing ESEA. Like other programs, there is a question about what to do with changing a bill when K-12 funding for some in Congress would be acceptable to cut back from current levels. Whether they will complete ESEA in this Congress remains a big question, but they will attempt to move forward. This may become a vehicle for the Early Learning Challenge Fund. We will be working to educate members on the opportunities to connect and to create better coordination between community and school-based early childhood programs under ESEA, and to create a continuum of early childhood education that is birth through age 8. We will continue to provide information as legislation is introduced and how we can all advocate for high-quality early childhood education in that vehicle. Since much of what we have talked about today is focused on advocacy, I'm pleased to turn this over to Harriet Dichter, who is now going to provide us with some information about successful strategies on working with business leaders.
Thank you, Adele.
So with the change of leadership in the House and the increased number of Republicans in the Senate, the First 5 Years Fund is working to develop relationships with civic, business, and other so-called grass tops leaders. The reason we are doing this is to support and reinforce the importance of public investment in early learning. These individuals can resonate with our elected officials, both Democrats and Republicans, in a new way, and they can be very helpful in securing direct communication with members of Congress. As a general matter, business leaders become convinced about the necessity of public investment in early learning because of the return on investment, because of the effectiveness of this investment in both the near term and the long term, and because of the underlying science and proof that is available to support early learning. Like many others who are not close to early childhood programming, when our business leaders visit a quality program and can see what is happening and understand how current public investment can be used to produce great results for children, it can help them to strengthen their own commitment and their willingness to speak out to other business leaders and, importantly, to elected officials. Business leaders understand that this is a smart strategy for American competitiveness and prosperity, even when there is a concern about deficits in our country. The business leaders that we are working with have told us that they are interested in data on the economic impact of early childhood investments, both now and in the future. They are interested in the impact on jobs in their communities and on the quality of the American workforce, both people working today and the competitive workforce that we must develop as we go forward. Now, business leaders need to be cultivated, just like everyone else, often by other business leaders. We don't find, as a general matter, that it's a good idea to be asking business leaders both for money for programs and at the same time to expect them to serve as public advocates and champions. They want to be approached, have the case made for them and to them, and get engaged themselves in speaking out for the programs. I'm confident that many of you on the call already have ongoing strategies in your own state and local communities to try and engage business leaders, and that you may have existing business leadership through your United Ways, your chambers, or specifically formed early childhood business groups to help advance this very important and critical agenda. Now, these groups have largely focused on state leadership and state investment in our programs, and of course that is important. But I think, as you've heard from the previous conversation, now is the time to help them to engage and focus on their federal senators and representatives and their relationships with people in the White House. We want to help them add the federal work to work that they may already be doing to promote strong investment and good results through state public policies and investment. If you are in a community that has not yet mobilized business leaders to support the early learning agenda, you will need to find bridges to the business leadership community and to provide them with a reason to get interested. And as we've mentioned, there are lots of them, and the support that they need to take this work on. I've mentioned chambers, United Ways, and other organized vehicles. Due to the need for business to stay competitive, if these vehicles are not available in your community as an entry point, you can consider going to your large employers. You can also consider taking a look at the board of your children-serving organizations in your community and see who they know who is connected to influentials in the business community to help build these important connections. As with much of this work, individual relationship building and support is crucial to gain their interest. Using the right framework makes all of the difference, and providing specific and concise information about how they can help is important. So now is a good time to call upon business leaders you know, and if you're interested in sharing your approaches or improving and starting to see more CEO support going forward, please make sure that we know about that so that we can have a fuller discussion in the future.
Thanks, Harriet. We also wanted to remind you that in December, the Congress passed the Child Nutrition Bill that includes changes to the Child and Adult Care Food Program. The Department of Agriculture is in the process of implementing the legislation, and the Food Research Advocacy Center, FRAC, is developing resources to help advocates, providers, and policymakers take advantage of the improvements in the reauthorization. The important changes to be aware of include the expansion of the after-school meals program, which is now available nationwide. It had been a pilot. The program provides federal funding to schools, local government agencies, and private nonprofits to serve a full meal at after-school programs that are located in low-income areas. Organizations also may be eligible to receive retroactive funding for meals served back to October 1, 2010. There must be adequate documentation for this, that the meals were served and met the federal nutrition guidelines, and the program must be eligible to participate. In addition, the new law eliminates burdensome program and auditing requirements that intimidated parents and generated hours of paperwork for family child care providers and sponsors. Parents can now return all paperwork directly to their providers, and community-based organizations supporting providers will have a simplified method of monthly reimbursements. There are also new provisions that make it easier for family child care providers in certain areas to receive higher reimbursement rates for children, as well as new requirements concerning healthier meals and snacks. Finally, nutrition education resources may be available at no cost for providers and parents participating in the child care food program. Unfortunately, there were not provisions that increased the reimbursement rate for participating centers and homes. There was a webinar earlier today sponsored by FRAC, which will be on their website along with other materials and resources. Danielle?
I'm here. Sorry about that.
Oh.
I'm here. I had you all on mute because I was trying to be a good host, and I forgot what I was doing. My apologies. Before we turn to questions, I wanted to let everyone listening know that there are a number of resources that have been developed or are being developed that can help you as you mobilize your networks to advocate with members of Congress. And I know that we went very quickly at the beginning. We're going to have Helen do some recapping in a little bit so that if you missed anything, it will come up again. But in terms of resources, the National Women's Law Center has written a report showing how states spent the ARRA funds to improve access to and the quality of child care programs serving low-income families, and also have a report that shows what the key policies are in states around child care subsidy. And that's certainly something that folks can use to build a story about what's happening to families in their state. My organization, CLASP, has compiled state-specific information on CCDBG expenditures and participation and has comparison charts showing funding over several fiscal years. So if your state is in decline, you'll see that on these charts. We also have information on each state's ARRA allocations, and we'll have some information about children served that you can draw down. The Early Care and Education Consortium has developed a kit for advocates that provides all the information needed to plan a site visit with members and staff. The First 5 Years Fund is developing a set of messaging papers that summarize key research and help frame the importance of early childhood for different audiences, and has developed a website that will have useful videos and information that local folks can use to draw in new advocates. FRAC, F-R-A-C, has extensive resources to help states and advocates plan for the implementation of the Child Nutrition Bill, as Helen referenced. And the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities has written many resources about the budget process and the potential impact on families, states, and localities if many of the more difficult proposals in Congress are adopted. In addition to all of these resources, through the leadership of the First 5 Years Fund, the organizations in the child care field at the national level are developing a number of resources, including an op-ed and a presser that can be customized for states and localities to share this information about what will happen if the ARRA funds go away and why we need these investments, and those will be available soon. And, of course, all of us will send out alerts and additional information as actions are needed. So let's turn to questions. If you would like to ask a question, please email to me, D-E-W-E-N, at claspa.org at this time. And here is our first question. Helen, we've had several folks ask about the sign-on letter for next week. Can you do two sentences about what the goal of that letter is and what the time frame for sending it out and getting it back will be?
Sure. The sign-on letter is a letter to the House and Senate, and we'll probably send it to the administration as well, and it relates to funding for Child Care Head Start and the Early Learning Challenge Fund in the FY 2011 appropriations bill. Remember, the CR ends on March 4th, and as we said, we haven't finalized the numbers for 2011, and we have a large uphill battle ahead of us. We thought it would be useful to have a sign-on letter both from national groups as well as state and local groups. NWLC will be sending out the alert early next week on the sign-on letter, and you can sign up through our Conveo system. Our other partners will be sending out similar alerts, and if you sign up through them, they will share their names with us, and we'll compile the names. We are going to give you about 2 weeks to get onto the letter so we can have a big showing as possible across the country.
We've had several folks write in with specific concerns about the early Head Start programs that were created under ARRA. I want to assure folks that when we talk about CCBG and Head Start advocacy, both for the continuation of 2011 and for the fiscal 2012, we are asking for those funds to be continued. We certainly don't want to see any of those programs closed. However, we cannot tell you that we think we will have success for sure. We are very hopeful, but we don't know what's going to happen. Helen, do you want to add anything to that for now?
I think that really sums it up. We are hopeful, but we don't know what will happen. These are very, very tough, challenging times, but we know that there are many members of Congress as well as the administration that is very concerned with the idea that these newly opened programs would have to shut their doors. So we have to speak loudly about what that would mean to children and families. That's all we can do right now.
And just to further clarify that, programs that are currently in operation have a grant at least through the end of this school year. So we won't see programs closing tomorrow or on March 5th after the CR expires. But programs are going to have to start making decisions, and we'll start to get guidance from the feds about what to do for the next program year. So this is really important for next year, but also for early Head Start and Head Start programs that have contracts with providers of food and diapers and other materials, who have arrangements with pediatricians and others in their community, as well as for outreach to new families for the next program year. So those are things to think about.
We do know that as child care money got tight, in a number of states, and they cut off families and tightened eligibility, that we've seen child care centers have to close classrooms. And in some cases, we've seen child care centers close, especially in low-income areas.
And, Helen, can you, on that, we've had several folks ask whether there is any likelihood that there will be no CR after March 4th and or that there will be no action on 2012. Can you briefly address that?
Yes. There has to be something to keep the government open. So you've heard a lot of discussion about Republicans saying that they will say, if we don't do these cuts, they won't vote to continue the debt. There has to be a vote on the debt on the debt limit, and that's what there's a lot of concern about, as to how they'll use spending cuts to affect that vote. However, they have to keep the government going. We've had standoffs, but we've never had the government going. So there will be two choices on March 4th. They will either pass an omnibus bill, or it's more likely that they will pass a continuing resolution that will last until fiscal year 2012. If that happens, they usually fund programs at last year's levels, but there can be exceptions, and we had one exceptions when the House had passed a continuing resolution last December. There will be funding for FY 2012, but as Danielle said, there is a strong push both for this fiscal year 2011 and for fiscal 2012 to make very, very deep cuts in discretionary programs. There won't be no funding at all, but we all as a community that cares about children and families and cares about essential government services will have to push back against efforts to make deep cuts in discretionary programs.
Okay. We've had a question about special education and where it falls in the 2011 and 2012 and whether there will be linkages between the special ed early childhood and the broader early childhood conversation. Adele, can you weigh in on that?
Sure. We were so pleased to have Part C receive a small amount of money in the ARRA. It's been very hard over the years to get Congress to focus on the importance of increasing funds for both Part C and Section 619. Most of the focus tends to be on the Part B K-12 portion. We do work closely with DEC, Easter Seals, and many other organizations to ensure that we are all working on each other's sign-on letters and other requests and visits. Obviously, the nexus between making sure that children with disabilities have access to high-quality child care, their participation in Head Start and early Head Start, and the connections with ESEA as well as special ed as a system is very important, and they come up in all the conversations that we bring forward. But it is a tougher road to push early childhood special ed when there's a 40% commitment required by law for the K-12 piece out of the Fed. So we look forward to many more people helping us with the advance of those early childhood program funds.
Great. Thank you. I think the other thing is that small amount, which was great, that $20 million was not in the House CR as an exception, so it would be much harder to get that small amount.
Harriet, you talked about recruiting business leaders. We've had several questions about how do we actually reach Republicans, more conservative folks who we may not have worked with in the past. Can you address that briefly?
Sure, I'm happy to try to do that. So I think part of this question has to do with how do we talk effectively to people basically who may be approaching the issue of public investment from a fairly conservative framework? And actually, when you listen to Helen at the beginning of this call talk about the framework, we think this is a good framework for all of us to be using. Investments in early education help us build a smarter, healthier, and stronger America. Deficit reduction will only come from wiser investment of public dollars, and data consistently shows that starting early is such a wise choice. Early education ultimately lowers costs, reduces deficits by increasing academic performance, improving health outcomes, decreasing reliance on social programs, and building economic productivity. So that framework that we're using is a good framework to introduce people to the work that we value and actually the value add of public sector investment. Having said that, I do want to mention that as people go out to speak with and introduce basically more conservative members of Congress to the early childhood programs and the opportunities, that it is also important to do your homework in advance, because people come at these issues from some of their own history and point of view, and so you will want to be researching more conservative members you might not have reached out to previously to see what their history is and what their special interests are. I think the group on this call is probably pretty sophisticated about how to do that, but I can tell you that any of the organizations on this call are happy to help or to think through with you any advance issues you would have as you're conducting the reaching out. When we talked earlier about building bridges, trying to figure out who the elected official will listen to is pretty important. And so if you determine, you want to determine who the best messenger is, and some of that bridge building to business leaders in your community, to other civic leaders, basically to be the ones who introduce them to the issues and make sure that they understand the framework on the economic competitiveness and the return on investment and the worthiness and importance of this investment in a deficit atmosphere can also be very important to achieving this goal.
Great. Thank you so much, Harriet. We've had a sort of follow-up question of that one, wondering who some of our allies are on both sides of the aisle in the next Congress. And we've had some folks emerge as champions, but I think what's really important is to know that folks who are on the Appropriations Committee in both the House and the Senate, folks that are on the House Education and Workforce Committee, the Senate Health Committee, that knowing whether your members are on those committees and making sure you get to them over and over again with stories of what's going on. And through each of our advocacy networks, we'll make sure you know who those targets are, that you are reaching out to them, and that you have the materials you need to reach those folks. Helen, we've had a couple of questions about the Early Learning Challenge Fund and the possibility of having it created either in the 2011 process or in the 2012. Can you, Adele, do you want to touch on that? I'm sorry. I'm not Adele. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it's an incredibly difficult road to create a new program in an environment of cutting existing programs. So while even a worthwhile program can have some difficulties, we have never seen them create a new program on a continuing resolution. So depending on the vehicles as they move forward will make a big difference about how to advance an Early Learning Challenge Fund. It could be on ESEA if that moves forward. It could be on a fiscal year 2012 appropriation bill if that doesn't turn into a CR next year. And so we are watching the different vehicles very carefully, but it would be highly unusual to expect it on the CR by the end of March, or a CR if they continue a CR for the remainder of the year.
Great. Helen, at the beginning of your comments, you touched on the percentage impact of going back to 08, as the Republicans have suggested. Can you talk again about what that means for kids and families? You talked about some numbers, and I think people just need to hear those numbers again really quickly, if you can do that.
They are fairly stunning numbers. Let me find them for you. If we go back to 08, we lose even more children than if we just lose the IRA money. We would lose 255,000 children from child care and 120,000 children from Head Start.
And how
Go ahead.
And how many do we lose if we just lose the IRA funds?
If we just lose the IRA funds, we lose approximately 300,000 children totally, Head Start, child care, and early Head Start combined.
Obviously not just, but...
Not just, but not right. not quite as many as if we go back to 2008.
And Harriet has kindly done math for us, Helen, and finds that if you add together the IRA funds and those numbers that you decided from 08, we could lose as many as 675,000 children, which is a substantial number of children across the country.
Stunning.
Go ahead.
Right. No, it's a stunning number of children.
It's really a shocking number. So I think we should say it one more time. Were we to lose what I think we will characterize as the prudent addition of kids through ERA and go back to 08 across our funding streams, up to 675,000 kids. It's a lot.
And I think the dramatic size of that number just brings home again the fact that collecting information about what happens to those families in your states and communities is critically important. So knowing what's going on with families who are put on the wait list, what happens to families who lose their subsidy, what is the effect of raising eligibility, of raising co-fees, of lowering rates, what happens to providers who lose significant numbers of children who have been on the subsidy? Do they go out of business, and what is the impact of that on your communities and on access to quality care? I think that being able to tell all of those stories on collecting all that information is going to make a difference. Harriet?
Well, I was just also thinking about since that time, also the enormous amount of infrastructure really that has been built basically to support good quality both in Head Start and in child care that would also be deeply affected. And as part of that story, as we frame out the potential, were we back at 08 levels for the loss of services to 675,000 kids, that, you know, the other implications are very deep into the things that we all know are necessary to really sustain and get to the kind of benefits, basically, that we know we're very capable of producing for children and families.
Great.
We hope this doesn't have to happen. When we had deep budget cuts in 1981, we created a project called Child Watch, where we worked with the Junior League to look at the impact of the cuts. But it will, as Danielle and Harriet said, be very important for all of you at the local level, whatever cuts come down. And we hope they're not as deep as this, and we're going to work hard to avoid them. But to to be able to tell the story and to share that information with all of us so we can put it together.
We've had a question about where folks can find subsidy program information in their state. CLASP, our website is clasp.org, and we publish all the data that we can find about participation and expenditures in your state. We also have some information about numbers of low-income children in your state, which can be used to tell the story as well. We also strongly encourage folks to make contact with their child care state administrator, to bring in their recent resource and referral agencies. All those folks have information about what's going on with the money in their state. And each of us has, everybody has networks in their states to link to and to make sure that you're using the best possible data that is out there.
The National Women's Law Center collects key subsidy data related to eligibility, co-payments, rates, and other things, which is available on our website. And we will also put on our website, we sort of try to keep a running fact sheet about the impact of these cuts in different states.
And several folks have asked if we can find a way to help people easily navigate between all of those resources, both the ones Helen and I just mentioned and the ones I mentioned earlier. And we will definitely put on at least the CLASP website, and I think others will as well, some ways that people can navigate between the different, and others are doing it as well, Harriet.
Well, I was also just wanting to add to that to try to assist people with the state-specific. Danielle had mentioned that next week there'll be information going out with sample op-ed pieces and sample press releases, and there'll be state-specific data attached, basically, or incorporated for people to use so that you won't have to go through a lot of work to be able to customize and to be able to sort this through whichever state you're living and working in.
And Adele, I'm going to turn this one over to you. Somebody just asked about whether funding for pre-K programs is included in what we've talked about.
Well, given that, there is Head Start in this, again, if you are asking about whether there will be a newly created federal program to supplement state pre-K programs, that is in the same boat as the Early Learning Challenge Fund. Again, this is about creating new programs in an environment where they are looking to reduce spending on current programs. So it would be just as potentially difficult to move yet another new program for supplementing state-funded pre-K as it would the Challenge Fund.
And also, to the extent that a state might be using their matching money, you know what I'm saying, people are allowed to use dollars basically related to CCDVG to help to finance these programs, right? Were there to be a loss of resources that could impact what look to be state-funded pre-K programs as well. So I don't know if the question was heading in that direction, but there could be some interactive effect, basically, from our Head Start and child care resources into state-based and state-run pre-kindergarten programs, depending on how dollars get wrapped up at the state level.
And the same could be said of Title I, which had an ERA increase, which was unlikely to be replicated again. And it is already difficult for school districts who are looking at AYP and other things happening starting in the third grade and above to put more money, they say, in younger children. And so following how Title I is funded will also impact the expansion of pre-K programs in your states and districts.
Now, the administration has been a strong supporter of the Early Learning Challenge Fund. So as you move into a 2012 budget, it will more likely continue to push as a new program an Early Learning Challenge Fund because that's on its unfinished agenda.
Helen, I'm going to give you this one. We have somebody asking for a little bit of clarification on the after-school food program. Does that require a new way of a new implementation in the states? Will they have to put out new guidance? How will that start to
now that, go out? That all comes from the federal. It all comes from Washington. So you follow FRAC's website, it'll come out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's FRAC.org, FRAC.org.
Right, www.FRAC.org.
We've had a question. Somebody wants to know what the status of TANF is. I don't want to leave that out of a conversation. I think you all know that TANF was extended for a year in November, and we expect that during this year, this calendar year, that Congress will have some conversations, possibly some hearings on TANF. Several of the organizations have put out their recommendations to try and think about TANF in a different way as a way to help lower the rate of child poverty and to look at the kinds of jobs that families get rather than just putting folks into a job. I will tell you that it's likely that it will be an uphill battle. We are not seeing a lot of interest in reauthorizing TANF, particularly before an election in 2012, but we do want to create a program that better serves the poorest children and their families. And so CLASP and other organizations will continue to move forward with those ideas. We have another question about how the proposed changes in funding, especially if we see funding cuts, will affect the early childhood advisory councils. Interestingly, the ECACs are actually fully funded. The ARA had $100 million for those councils. All that money has gone out the door. States have it available to them for 3 years. The problem, I think, will come in the match that states had to put up, which was 70% of what they got in their grant. And while all the states that got the council money were able to find that, at least for the first year, as states face more and more dire situations, it may be increasingly difficult to come up with the state match. But the federal dollars have been sent out to the states. They cannot be taken back, and states have them to use at their disposal. I think that that is all the questions we have at this time. Helen, why don't you go ahead and sum up for us? What are the immediate next steps you want folks to take?
We've got a lot of marching orders for you all. You've done a great job the last 2 years getting the IRA money and maintaining the IRA money in the budget and in the appropriations process. So here's what we need you to do. Starting tomorrow, call the White House tomorrow and tell them that protecting funding for child care Head Start and Early Head Start will help us build a smarter, healthier, and stronger America. Sustain the $1 billion funding for Head Start and Early Head Start, as well as the $1 billion funding for child care during FY 2011. Maintain these levels into FY 2012. The call-in number for the White House is 202-456-1111, 202-456-1111. We'll also, you know, be on the lookout. If you haven't already, you will be getting an alert about this. Share that with your networks. Sign and circulate the organizational sign-on letter to Congress that we all will be circulating next week. Collect data and stories showing the impact of these programs in your states and communities, showing the impact of the good they do as well as the impact of the cuts. Find moms who have gotten child care assistance over the years and share their stories of what child care assistance enabled them to do. Commit to making 3 calls to members of Congress between now and March 4th to talk about the importance of investments in early childhood. Develop new relationships with grass tops who might have access to new members of Congress. Think about submitting an op-ed, and there, as Harriet said, there'll be samples for your state to customize to local papers, both large and small, and if you can't get an op-ed, write a letter to the editor. Be flexible. There are rumors that we could have a CR by February 18th. Not so sure, but stay tuned. And we all, you get lots of emails from all of us, so we will keep you up on any new developments. That should give you plenty of work between now and March 4th.
Thank you, Helen. That was great. I'm just going to repeat the White House call-in number because that's our first charge to the field. That number is 202-456-1111, and each of the organizations on this call and others here at the national level will be sending out a reminder about that call tomorrow, and we hope that you all make that call so the White House hears from our numbers about how important this issue is. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. An audio file of the phone call will be available on our website, as well as additional information about the budget and appropriations process, the status of our request for funding, and the resources we've talked about today. If you have additional questions, feel free to send them, and we will answer them to the best of our ability. And don't forget to call the White House tomorrow and pledge to get three of your friends to call as well. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day.